Welcome to the 298th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I am your host for today, Patrick Winograd. In this edition, our topics are a review of my weekend predictions, a look at the end of the Australian Open, a review of the NFC and AFC championship games, and a look back at the last week in college basketball, and a look back at the NBA, but let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our social media at 4th and 24. In the NFL, I went 2-0. In the NBA, I went 1-3. And then in college basketball, I went 4-0, which brought my record to 7-3 this week and a 1,268-788 overall record, a 61.7% winning percentage. But look, I thought, like I said last week, I had a pretty rough week in college basketball, especially. You know, the NBA is kind of 50-50 all the time, but the college basketball weeks, I don't expect to go that poorly, and they did. And this week, I felt, obviously, I had a good week. I went 4-0. Started on Friday. Number 11, Purdue, beat number 21, Michigan, 91-64. Purdue coming out angry after their loss to Ohio State earlier in the week that snapped a 26-game home winning streak. Number 1, Auburn, beat number 6, Tennessee, 53-51. That was a football game, not a basketball game. There were no fouls being called in that game, despite the fact that they could have called probably like 50, which the SEC officials do tend to do sometimes, but they chose to swallow the whistle on Saturday. But you know what? They called it even for both teams, honestly. So I guess you can't really complain if both teams are not getting any calls, then no one's really benefiting from it. And then number 7, Houston beat number 12, Kansas, 92-86 in double overtime. Just a ridiculous game. Kansas blew a 6-point lead with 17 seconds left. DeJuan Harris missing both free throws at the line, allowing Houston to get a three, and then they got a steal and a three to send it to double overtime. So Kansas definitely should have won that one. Maybe in regulation, too, you could argue. But Houston comes away with the win. And then number 22, Missouri, beat number 16, Ole Miss, 83-75. And again, look, you have two games, Tennessee and Kansas, that I think easily I could have and probably should have lost. Well, I shouldn't have lost the Auburn-Tennessee prediction, but we can say Kansas should have won that game. And, you know, that was the risk you take when – that's the risk I take when I pick one road team to actually win, because it is so hard to win in college basketball on the road, as we'll see in some of the conversations about the other games of the week. But, look, I got them all right this week because I went out on a limb. I took the risk and picked Houston on the road, despite the fact that it was definitely, obviously, a very tough place to play at Allen Fieldhouse. But I know how tough it is to play at Allen. I pick my spots when I actually pick against them. And I think I'm actually undefeated picking against Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse. But I don't do it very often. I'll put it that way. It doesn't happen very often. But when I make that pick, I have to be really, really confident that the team going in there is really, really good, because it takes a lot to come out of there with a win. In the NFL, though, maybe some easier predictions. The two home teams have been better than the teams they were playing all season long. I know that Josh Allen and the Bills have been playing well and beat the Chiefs in the regular season at home, but, you know, that was the Chiefs' one loss. It was the one game where playing everybody close came back to bite them. Very consistent throughout the year. Chiefs won 32-29 in that game. That was a win for me. And then the Eagles beat the Commanders 55-23. That was also a win for me. Just ran all over Washington in that game. And Washington, too many fumbles. I think they had three or four in the game. I know they had three for sure. I don't know if they ended up with four. But I know that every single time Washington had a chance to tie it up or bring it back within one possession, someone fumbled. And it was just really a conundrum for the Commanders that obviously set them up for failure in that game, especially because their defense wasn't really playing very well either. But 2-0 in those predictions, so 6-0 so far. And then in the NBA, you know what? It happens. This will happen. The Clippers beat the Bucks 127-117. That one I lost. I thought, you know, Bucks playing a lot better, even though they're going on the road. The Clippers are playing well. They have Kawhi back now. He made some ridiculous plays in that game. But I still thought the Bucks would win. They didn't. The Rockets beat the Cavs 135-131. This one was interesting because I actually picked the Cavs before I knew that these teams were playing twice over the course of the week. And then I realized that. And once I realized that the Rockets won the first matchup, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. I mean, the Cavs are definitely not going to get swept by the Rockets in a week, and here we are. The Rockets did just that, so I got that one wrong. And then the Timberwolves beat the Nuggets 133-104. You know, this isn't the Timberwolves-Nuggets from the playoffs last year. These are two different teams, and the Nuggets have definitely been the better team, but kind of sliding a little bit recently, so I guess I could have seen that one coming, but I didn't, and I got it wrong. And then finally, the Celtics beat the Mavericks 122-107. That was the prediction that I got right in the NBA. So overall, you know, obviously I could do better in the NBA. Captain Obvious over here reporting in. But look, overall, good week. Not too dissatisfied with those predictions. And, you know, we will see what happens next week. Of course, those predictions will be posted on our social media on Thursday. But now let's move on to tennis and talk about the Australian Open. Starting on the women's side, of course, we had Madison Keys who won the final. But before we get there, we're going to talk about that journey in the quarterfinals. I'm going to breeze through these matches, but, you know, just sets the stage for the semis. Paula Badosa defeated Coco Gauff. Sabalenka defeated Pavlyuchenkova. Keys defeated Svitolina. And then Swiatek defeated Emma Navarro, who was actually playing a pretty good tournament up until then. But then in the semifinals, it was number one seeded Aryna Sabalenka against number 11 seeded Paula Badosa. Sabalenka won 6-4, 6-2. I don't want to say easy match, but a pretty good matchup for her. She's pretty good on hard court, so she won that one pretty decisively. And then number 19 seeded Madison Keys beat Iga Swiatek. She lost the first set 5-7 and then won the second set 6-1 and won the final set 7-6. 10-8 on that tiebreaker. Keys just, I mean, it was a great run, obviously. And in the final, Keys beat number one seeded Aryna Sabalenka 6-3, 2-6, 7-5. Just to talk about the story for a second, Madison Keys won this Grand Slam in her 47th career appearance in a slam. She had made the U.S. Open Finals in 2017 and made the semifinals of five slams total, including the Australian Open twice. And quarterfinals of another four slams prior to winning this year. But she's played in at least one slam every year since 2011. And again, just her first actual win in a Grand Slam, despite always floating around the top as a seeded player, I should say. Pretty much she's always been in that mix. And like I said, nine times advancing to the quarterfinals at least in slams in that time period. But this time was the first time she broke through and actually won a slam. After, by the way, I mean, 7 years after she had made the U.S. Open Finals and lost to Sloane Stephens in that All-American Women's Final. So she deserves a lot of credit. This is honestly a great story for a player this late into her career to win. And, you know, maybe it starts a really, really strong season for her. You never know. I mean, obviously, the Grand Slam season will end with the U.S. Open on hard court again. And maybe she can get a title on her home turf, you could say. And then on the men's side, there were definitely a few upsets here, namely Novak Djokovic defeating third-seeded Carlos Alcaraz, to advance to the semifinals. Everything else may be a little bit standard, but Ben Shelton was against Lorenzo Sonego, kind of a interesting matchup there between one really funky player and one serve-dominant player. But Shelton won that one. Zverev defeated Tommy Paul to get to the semifinals. He's the number two-seeded player, and then Jannik Sinner defeated number eight-seeded Alex de Minaur, the hometown kid. I'm from Australia, but he did that in three sets. And then in the semifinals, of course, Djokovic suffered an injury against Alcaraz. He tried to play through it against Zverev. Didn't quite go well for him. He was definitely moving very, very slowly. Zverev barely won the first set, but he did win it 7-6 in a 7-5 tiebreaker, and then Djokovic retired as soon as that point, basically as that point was actually flying through the air, pretty much, well, if you go back and watch it. And Zverev advanced to the finals off of that. Then you have Sinner, who beat Shelton 7-6 in the first set. He won the tiebreaker 7-2 and then 6-2, 6-2 in the final two sets. Sinner just too much of a match for Ben Shelton, honestly. Shelton, he even acknowledged this himself. He needs to get to a level that he's not currently at to be able to beat the Sinners and the Alcarazes of the world consistently. Just because he really just hasn't had that much big match experience, whereas those guys have that advantage over him. And he also needs to get more consistent, but this was definitely a great showing for him. The farthest he's ever gone at the Australian Open, and he's starting the season off on the right foot. Obviously seeded 21st in this tournament, but will be definitely receiving a little bit of a points boost after the tournament. And then in the final, Jannik Sinner defeated Alexander Zverev in straight sets, 6-3, 7-6, and a 7-4 tiebreaker, and then 6-3. I want to talk about Sinner's dominance, though. Again, doing a little quick and dirty recap here, but just to talk about Sinner, I talked about the story of Keys. Sinner has lost one match since losing in the quarterfinals of ATP Canada against Rublev last year. He's 37-1 in his last 38 matches in that time frame. He's now won 21 matches in a row, including winning the Davis Cup, ATP Finals, ATP Masters Shanghai, the U.S. Open, and ATP Masters Cincinnati. Both of those two Masters events are 1,000-point level events. And Sinner has now won the last three hardcourt slams because he also won the 2024 Australian Open and the U.S. Open, which of course means he's won both of the last two Australian Opens and all three of his Grand Slams in his career, all since the start of 2024. So he has lost twice in the last five slams and has won the other three for all of his career Grand Slams. We'll see if he can do it on the other surfaces this year. That'll be the next test. Can he go to Roland Garros and win? Can he go to Wimbledon and win? Because it's very clear that he is probably the best hardcourt player in the world, and it's maybe not that close either, considering just how dominant he was this Australian Open and the fact that he already won it last year. And his points advantage over everybody is just ridiculous because of all the hardcourt tournaments at the end of the year. All those ones that I mentioned were all hardcourt tournaments that he won in a row. So, look, he has had a lot of success recently, and I don't expect it to stop anytime soon. He's got a ridiculous advantage on Zverev for that number one ranking, and I don't think he's losing that advantage anytime soon. But with that, you know, looking forward to more tennis coverage this year, maybe a lot more when the French Open kicks back up again. But for now, we'll turn back to more traditional sport for this podcast and talk about the NFL. Of course, talked about these games a little bit in weekend predictions, but I'll kind of go into some more depth here. Look, the Chiefs beat the Bills 32-29. Really, really close game. I've seen a lot of comparisons. You know, a lot of people talk about this matchup being Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. I have said, and I said it earlier this season on the podcast, Peyton Manning actually beat Tom Brady, even if Brady overall was pretty good in that rivalry and definitely had the advantage in terms of record. And, you know, I see the comparisons in terms of this, you know, one guy puts up the stats and the other guy puts up the wins, for sure. I see it. But at the same time, this is Warriors-Rockets. And I know a lot of people have said this, but look, the Bills have not beaten the Chiefs when it's mattered at all. I mean, that's just a fact. It doesn't, Stephon Diggs has been there, they haven't won. Stephon Diggs hasn't been there and they haven't won. Mahomes has been young and they haven't won. It doesn't matter. It was in Buffalo and they didn't win. It doesn't matter what round it's in. It's been in the AFC Championship game. It's been in the divisional round. It doesn't matter. The Bills have lost this game every single time they played. So I get the comparisons to the Peyton Manning-Tom Brady rivalry, but you can't be a rivalry until both sides are actually able to win. It's not a rivalry if it's one-sided. That's my overall take on that discourse. But I have to say, in terms of this game, phenomenal game. The Chiefs went into halftime with a 21-16 lead. The Bills definitely missed a few opportunities in the first half. But overall, I think the Chiefs' defense was really just the factor that stepped up. And then the second half, the Bills did take the lead into the fourth quarter. They were up 22-21, which, of course, not that big of a lead, but it is a lead nonetheless. And the Chiefs came back, scored 11 points in that fourth quarter to take that 32-29 lead and won the game. I'm not going to get wrapped up in the ref controversy. I really don't think, I think there were definitely a few calls that were 50-50 that went the Chiefs' way, and there were definitely a few calls that I think were obviously going the Chiefs' way that weren't 50-50, but at the same time, the Bills got a few calls too, so I'm not going to opine on it. I'm just going to say that both teams got a lot of calls in that game. It wasn't necessarily the best officiated game, and I'll just leave it at that because I really don't think it's worth debating who got five bad calls in their favor and who got six and who got seven. It's kind of an empty conversation. So congratulations to the Chiefs on advancing to the Super Bowl again with a chance to three-peat, something that doesn't happen very often in any sport, let alone in the NFL. Something that even Tom Brady never did. So, you know, this would be a just monumental win for the Chiefs if they're able to get it. But they're going to be playing the Eagles, who have had a ridiculous season. They started off this game on fire. They scored a touchdown on their opening drive after the Commanders fumbled. And then Commanders went down the field, got a field goal, and Saquon Barkley ran for like a 75-yard touchdown. So this game was basically over before it started. The Eagles were up 14-3 at the end of the first quarter, carried a 27-15 lead into the half. Commanders made it closer. You know, they kept it in that range, and then the Eagles closed it out with 21 in the fourth quarter. So it was 34-23 going into the fourth, but then the Eagles just took the game over. The Commanders, again, I said it earlier, they just fumbled the game away, pretty much. And I mean that in a literal sense, like they fumbled the ball a ton. Not in another meaning of fumbled. They literally just turned the ball over way too many times for their own good. Basically the reverse of the Commanders-Lions game, where the Lions turned it over too many times. This time the Commanders turned it over too many times, and it came back to bite them. You lose the turnover battle that easily in a football game, especially in the playoffs, you're probably going to lose. I mean, it's very, very rare to lose the turnover battle by that much and come back and win the game, especially when the other team's at home and is already the better team anyway. But look, Eagles-Chiefs in the Super Bowl, it's a great, great matchup. I'm not going to give an official prediction now because, you know, I'll wait for some injury news to come out, and also because next week we still have another podcast before the Super Bowl, so we can do our official preview then. Not going to do it now, but we will change gears now and move to basketball action. As always, we will start with college basketball action from the last week. I do have to say, last week we started this a lot later with a lot more topics on hand, so I'm very, very happy that I can start it a little bit earlier and talk a lot more about my favorite sport, of course. But also, it's kind of the biggest sport at the moment, with the NFL season wrapping up and college football now complete. But look, starting all the way back on last Tuesday, number 4 Alabama beat Vanderbilt 103-87. Vanderbilt, a strong, strong team, which is just hilarious to actually say, but it's true this year. They play an interesting style. They don't necessarily have any true big men, but it's working for them. Even in this game, they kept it close when they honestly probably shouldn't have been able to keep it close. And then, you know, at the end, Alabama pulled away, but Vanderbilt definitely played well, held their own in this game on the road. Then number 6 Tennessee beat number 14 Mississippi State 68-56. Mississippi State could not get a shot to go in this game. I mean, that was the story of the game. They just could not knock down a shot. Tennessee, obviously a very strong defensive team, but Mississippi State also had some open looks that they missed, and that was the reason why they lost the game. Then Ohio State beat number 11 Purdue 73-70. I talked about this earlier in reference to the Michigan game, that Purdue was angry coming off this loss. This was a crazy game. Purdue led by as many as 16 points early in the game, too. But Ohio State came storming back in the second half, had a great comeback, and then at the end of the game just put the clamps on Purdue's offense, and they were able to get enough scoring themselves to escape with the win. And it's really a season-changing win for Ohio State because they've been kind of sliding in the Big Ten after they had a pretty strong non-conference. I mean, an up-and-down non-conference, but a really, really tough schedule. That they won some big games during, you know, they beat Kentucky, they beat Texas to begin the year. They lost to Pitt, they lost to Texas A&M as well, but, you know, they played a ton of good teams. And they've come out better for it. They've been more battle-tested than the team that they've played pretty much in every game in the Big Ten. This might be the only exception because Purdue also played a really ridiculous schedule, but they had a tough loss to Indiana at home in overtime too. So Ohio State needed this win. A lot more than Purdue needed it, and they played like it, and they escaped with that victory. Speaking of teams who needed to win, UCLA beat number 18 Wisconsin 85-83. It's not that this team needed this win in the sense that, you know, they were falling out of the tournament picture quite like Ohio State was, but UCLA has needed a win over one of the top-tier teams in the Big Ten the whole season. They beat Oregon really early in the season, but since then, you know, they had a four-game losing streak only a few weeks ago. They've now won four in a row after their win last night, which I'll talk about briefly later. But this is a really, really big win for them to get a ranked win, a quad one win. And it's going to stay that way. It's a very, very close game, and Wisconsin had come in on a 7-game winning streak themselves. So a very good win for the Bruins. Then you have number 19, UConn, who beat Butler 80-78 in overtime. They are ridiculously overrated. I have no idea how they're still ranked. There's not a single metric that thinks this team is in the top 25 other than, I think, BPI. I think, actually, no metric has them even in the top 30. So I don't know how they're still ranked in the AP poll. Actually, I do. It's because voters are worried that Dan Hurley might throw a rock through their window if they don't vote them. but look, yeah, sure, you don't want to give UConn fuel, but this team is not three-peating. It's not happening. There is no way this is a championship team. It just very clearly is not. They're still a very good team. And I think when fully healthy, when Liam McNeely comes back, they're going to be a lot better. But right now, as currently built, there is absolutely no way that they're making a super deep run in March. They're definitely going to be a scary team. They might be a 5 or a 6 seed that pulls an upset if they can pull it together. But right now, they're trending more towards a 7 or an 8 seed. So if they run into a 1 seed in the second round, I mean, the way the 1 seeds are this year, I don't see them beating any of those teams. So it's an interesting conversation, but I think UConn's very, very overrated. And I think this game proved that. Butler's not a team you should be going to overtime with. If you're a top three team in the Big East, which they technically still are. But then you have Texas, who beat number 22 Missouri, 61-53. If you want to talk about a team who really needed a win, Texas is kind of buried at the bottom of the SEC, even though they are a really good team. It's just that, you know, this conference is just loaded. And normally a bubble team is somewhere in the middle of their conference, but Texas is definitely down at the bottom with, you know, South Carolina, Oklahoma as well, Arkansas for sure. But they're probably still a good portion better than the real bottom of the conference teams like South Carolina and Arkansas. But it's just hard to get wins. I mean, you got to play a ranked team pretty much every night. And Texas did pull off this upset. They did beat Missouri. And that was a big one. They needed that. And now they've started to actually kind of round out their resume a little bit more. They're now trending upwards, even though they're still not secure in the tournament. Then you have Arizona State, who beat number 23 West Virginia 65-57. The Sun Devils going on the road and pulling off the upset over the Mountaineers, who have had a very up and down season, a very hard team to trust. They've had a lot of injuries that they've been dealing with. Tucker DeVries still is not playing, but you know, when they're fully healthy, they're really, 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 really good team. They're capable of beating anybody. When they're not fully healthy, they can kind of range a lot. They vary a lot in their level of play, and this was one of their worst games of the year. It wasn't even their worst of the week, though, and I'll get to that later. But number 25, Louisville beat SMU 98-73. I had to put this in here even though it wasn't competitive because Louisville is really, really, really good. I don't think people understand that this team kind of started the season off rocky, and then they got an injury to Kayshon Pryor that everybody thought would be kind of, okay, that's the end of the season for Louisville, Pat Kelsey, you know. Good job of building a good roster. They're going to be competitive, but they're not going to be that good with all those guys out. That just hasn't been the case. I mean, Louisville is probably going to run the table in the ACC in every game other than playing Duke. And frankly, they could probably beat Duke. They have the best chance of any team to beat them. But look, this team is not getting enough love. They probably should be ranked higher. They've been playing like a top 15 team for the last few weeks, maybe even better than that, frankly. They went on the road and beat Pitt. They've now gone on the road and beaten SMU, who's really the only other team other than North Carolina, and Wake, who's also on the bubble, that really has any chance of making the tournament other than Louisville, Pitt, Clemson, Duke. It's really kind of North Carolina, Wake Forest on the bubble. And you know, Clemson was kind of down there too, and Pitt is definitely on the bubble too. But for Louisville to go on the road and beat an SMU team that desperately needed a good win by 25 is just ridiculous. I mean, Chucky Hepburn had 16 assists in this game. Rain Smith had 30 points on 10 threes. This team is really, really good. Really, really dangerous. And then you have Florida, who beat South Carolina 70-69. South Carolina led or was tied wire to wire until 5 seconds left, where a layup won the game for Florida. Just a ridiculous game. But Florida escapes with the win. They don't get that bad loss. I mean, there are no bad losses in the SEC, but that definitely is the worst one you could take. Then you have number 13, Texas A&M, who did the same thing against number 16, Ole Miss. They trailed the entire game, and Emmanuel Obaseki, 3 with 13 seconds left, gave Texas A&M their only lead of the game. They got a stop on their final defensive possession, and all of a sudden, A&M pulled off an upset. Just a crazy, crazy game there. Both of those games on the same night in the SEC. Then you have number 20, St. John's, who beat Xavier in overtime, 79-71. Xavier has been really up and down this year. They started the season really strong, and then all of a sudden, Michigan beat them by 23 on a neutral court, and they just kind of spiraled for a few weeks. And then now they've kind of picked it up again. Even though they've lost some games, they've lost basically exclusively in overtime to teams at the top of the Big East. on the road. They have not lost many close games or many games at all at home, or any games to really the bottom tier teams. But St. John's did, of course, come out with this victory. They are playing really well as well. Rick Pitino's team cannot shoot threes at all, but they play some really great defense. And as a result, they're probably one of the top 15, 20 teams in the country as well. They're kind of in that Louisville discussion where they're really playing good basketball right now. They know their style. And even though it might not necessarily be the most well-rounded team, they still know who they are, and they're doing really well at exploiting other teams' flaws and kind of making their strengths known. Then you have Maryland, who went on the road, beat number 17 Illinois 91-70. No Tomislav Ivicic for Illinois, and it showed. 60 points in the paint, or maybe 62 for Maryland. But Derek Queen, Julian Reese, both had 25-plus. Just a ridiculous performance by them. They also went on the road and beat Indiana over the weekend. They had a really, really good week, and they needed it because predictive metrics love that team. Resume metrics didn't. Now they're probably more in line with each other. So, not probably. I know that for a fact because I looked at it yesterday. But look, Maryland needed the wins. They're getting them now. Purdue beat Michigan. I talked about that earlier. Then you have, speaking of weird Big Ten action, Minnesota beat number 15 Oregon, 77-69. Talked about Dawson Garcia's buzzer beater against Michigan in overtime. That woke this team up. They all of a sudden went on the road to Iowa last week and got a win, and then also beat Oregon. So they've now won three in a row in the Big Ten. They do play Michigan State tonight, though, at the Breslin Center. If they even keep that game close, I mean, Minnesota might be for real. I'm assuming that this is kind of the regression back to the mean game, although, you know, Michigan State hasn't lost a conference game yet. They're going to lose one at some point. They're not going 20-0. So, you know, they're going to lose a game at some point. I just don't know when. I don't think it's to Minnesota, though, but it would be really, honestly, really funny if Minnesota went in and pulled off that upset. I think they're a 14-point underdog. But just the story of going from 0-6 in the Big Ten to maybe potentially defeating the top three in the standings all in a two-week span would be funny. It's not going to happen. Then you have Auburn, who beat Tennessee. Talked about that game earlier. Number two, Duke beat Wake Forest, 63-56. This, you could argue, was one of Duke's toughest games. It's not their toughest. They still play at Clemson, I think, later in the season. But they don't have many tests on their schedule because of the fact that the ACC is so weak this year. And this is one of the harder ones. They got the win, though. And that's going to be, I mean, it's going to be relevant at the end of the year. That's going to be one of their only quad one wins if Wake Forest can climb back into the 75 or into the 70 top 75 range, excuse me, of the net, which I think they will do by the end of the season. But Duke still trending strong. Obviously, it doesn't really matter how many quad one wins you have if you just don't lose any games, and they only have two losses this year, and they're now 9 or 10-0 in the ACC, so they are not going to lose many games. Then you have number three, Iowa State, who went on the road, beat Arizona State 76-61. Arizona State obviously coming off that win over West Virginia with some momentum, but didn't carry it forward. Florida beat Georgia 89-59. Number five, Florida, I should mention. Georgia is definitely a tournament team. They're now trending down a little bit, but they should be a tournament team. So for Florida to come out with that win by that margin is just honestly a little bit stunning. Then you have Houston who beat Kansas. I talked about it earlier, the massive choke by Kansas. Not a great game for them. Then you have Vanderbilt, who stormed the court for the second week in a row, beat Kentucky 74-69. This team just has a lot of things going its way right now, and I don't think that it's going to stop anytime soon, but we will see what happens with them going forward. They're definitely building a tournament resume now. They didn't really have the good wins to start the year, but they're now starting to pick them up. Texas, I talked about their win over Missouri earlier in the week. They came back from down 22 points to number 13 Texas A&M to win 70-69. Trey Johnson had 30 in this game. He is a bucket. He's going to be a top 10 pick in the draft. But Texas just clutch shot by Tremont Mark to give them the win. Then you have number 14 Mississippi State, who beat South Carolina 65-60 in overtime. So heartbreak in Columbia again. Number 22 Missouri in the other Columbia beat number 16 Ole Miss 83-75. Ole Miss lost two games this week, but that's just how it goes in the SEC. They played two ranked games. They played two now top 20 teams. It happens. I mean, it is what it is. And then you have Xavier, who beat number 19 UConn 76-75. If you're wondering why I wanted to rant about UConn being overrated earlier, this is why. Xavier, again, continuing their strong stretch of play. UConn, not so much. And then speaking of weird upsets, Kansas State beat number 23 West Virginia 73-60. Yes, the Kansas State that is 9-11 on the season. This is what I'm saying with West Virginia in terms of, can you really trust this team? I think the answer is kind of no. I mean, they're just really, really inconsistent. Then you have number 17, Illinois. They beat Northwestern 83-74. Final score was a lot closer than the actual game was. Number 18, Wisconsin beat Nebraska 83-55. A strong statement by the Badgers and a good bounce back that they needed after their loss earlier in the week to UCLA. Then Arizona beat number 3, Iowa State, 86-75 in overtime. This was a crazy game. Arizona probably definitely should have lost this, but, you know, it was back and forth within 5 or 6 points pretty much the entire game. Arizona ended the first half on a 12-0 run to take a lead in the halftime after Iowa State had a 7-point lead. And then all of a sudden, Arizona at the end of the game needed a literal half-court shot to send the game to overtime, and Caleb Love hit it. And what was even funnier is that Love was 1-for-10 from three heading into that shot. Of course, he makes the half-court shot. He gets all this energy, and then he makes three threes in overtime, and he wins the game for Arizona. So, you know, technically it's an upset because Arizona was unranked, and Iowa State was top five. It doesn't change my opinion about either team, honestly. Arizona was favored in this game, and they were favored for a reason, because they just had a very, very rough non-conference slate of a bunch of losses in close games. They just couldn't finish any games at all. They're not actually a bad team. They played a bunch of tough teams. They just happened to come out on the wrong end by 2 or 3 points in every single one of those games. And now they're starting to show in conference play that they're there for real. I mean, they're 8-1 in the Big 12. They're now only behind Houston, who's undefeated. Ahead of Kansas, ahead of Iowa State. They are the real deal. Anybody who watches basketball intently knows this and knows that metrics have said this team is way better than their record indicates all season, and now it's starting to catch up. And they have a lot of momentum going forward after that win. And then UCLA beat USC 82-76. Just wanted to mention that one because it's now a, of course, Big Ten rivalry. But USC, they've been playing some good basketball recently, so it was definitely a tougher matchup for UCLA than they would have anticipated maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. But the Bruins have now won 4 in a row. So worth mentioning, they might be ranked pretty soon. Wouldn't surprise me. So wanted to mention that one. And now finally, we can move on and talk about the NBA. I've spent literally half the podcast talking about college basketball, but that's what you have to expect with me, right? I mean, we know how much I love that sport. But in the NBA, though, you have the Cavs, you have the Celtics at the top of the East. Cavs at 37-9. Yeah, they actually can't break the Warriors record anymore unless they win 35 in a row. Then they can tie it. But yeah, that's not happening. They're 5-5 in their last 10. Now you can see why it was so hard for the Warriors and for the Bulls to get to those all-time records. The Celtics also 5-5 in their last 10, but they are still 5.5 back of the Cavs because of their recent slide, and that means that the Knicks are pretty close to that second seed. The Knicks only one game back of the Celtics for the second seed because they are 7-3 in their last 10. They've won 4 in a row. The Bucks are 26-18. They're 10 games back, but 3.5 back of the Knicks for the third seed. They are 8-2 in their last 10. So are the Pacers, who are 25-20 on the season. 1.5 back of the Bucks for the 4 seed. That would be a really interesting playoff series if it happened again. The Heat, talk about familiar playoff series. Knicks and Heat would be the matchup right now. They're 23-22. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They're only in the 6th seed, though, because the Magic have lost 8 of their last 10. They're now 24-24 on the season. Still only a half a game back of the Heat for the 6th seed. The Pistons are also at 500 at 23-23. They're 5-5 in their last 10 as well. So they are a half game back of the Heat, tied with the Magic in that 8th seed/7th seed spot. You have the Hawks, who are at 22-24. They've lost 5 in a row. So, I mean, look, the Heat could very easily be in 9th if any of these teams have been playing well recently, but they're not. The Hawks, 15 games back of 1st, 1.5 out from 6th. Then you have the Bulls at 20-27, 3-7 in their last 10, but they're still 1.5 games ahead of the Sixers, who are 17-27. They've won 2 in a row, but they're 3-7 in their last 10. Had a season-long losing streak of 8 games recently that they just snapped. The Raptors have won 4 in a row, but they're still 14-32 on the season. They're 5.5 back of the Bulls, so not really in that conversation. The Nets are 14-33. They've lost 7 in a row. The Hornets are 12-31. And the Wizards are 6-39, and they have lost 14 games in a row. They have become the team that they thought they would never be. The team that lost to the Pistons. Last year, of course, they made a lot of comments about that, and then they actually snapped that losing streak, and now, you know, the Wizards have become that team that is on the losing streak. Then now nobody wants to lose to them, because you can't be the first team to lose to the Wizards. Then in the West, you have the Thunder. They're also not going to break that record. They're 37-8. They're 7-3 in their last 10. Quickly catching up, though. Not really threatening for that spot yet, but they're definitely making some progress. The Rockets, like I said, they beat the Cavs twice last week. They beat the Celtics last night. So they're 8-2 in their last 10. They've won 3 in a row. They're 31-14 on the season. 6 games back of the Thunder and 1 game ahead of the Memphis Grizzlies, who are 31-16 in that third seed. They are 7-3 in their last 10. The Nuggets, 28-18, 2.5 back of the Grizzlies. They are 7-3 in their last 10 as well. The Lakers have won 4 in a row. They're still 6-4 in their last 10, which isn't great, but 4 games in a row is a good winning streak. They're now 10.5 back of first, 1 back of Denver for that fourth seed. It would be really funny if the Nuggets and the Lakers played again in the postseason. Then you have the Clippers, who are 6-4 in their last 10. They're 26-20 on the season, 1 game back of the Lakers. The Timberwolves are in the 7 seed. They have won 3 in a row. Good streak for them. Which puts them 1 game behind the Clippers for the 6th seed. The Suns are only a half a game behind the Timberwolves because they have won 8 of their last 10 and 3 in a row, meaning they are just a half game back of the Timberwolves. So are the Mavs at 25-22, 4-6 in their last 10, though not trending in the right direction. And the Kings are only a half a game away from that bunch up of the Suns and the Mavs as well, just 2 games out from the Clippers at 24-22. They are 7-3 in their last 10. And then you have the two teams that have been sliding out of that picture. The Warriors in 11th currently, 1.5 back of the Kings at 22-23, 4-6 in their last 10. The Spurs at 20-23, who are 3-7 in their last 10. They're 2.5 back of the Kings. And then you have the not-so-good teams. You have the Blazers at 17-29. The Pelicans at 12-35, who had a little winning streak for a little bit, but now they've lost 3 in a row. And the Jazz, who are 10-34, they have lost 6 in a row and 9 of their last 10. But that is all we have for today, of course, in the NBA and also for this podcast. So that will wrap this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, February 4th, where we will look back at my weekend predictions again and preview the Super Bowl quickly and then talk about basketball action, of course, with another weekly review of both the NBA and the college basketball. In the meantime, be sure to check out my additional content, which includes my weekly college basketball bracket updates, which will be posted Wednesday as in tomorrow, and then starting next week, they will be posted twice a week on Mondays and on Fridays for the rest of the season, but also my picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday. All of this content on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24 on Twitter and Instagram, and some of that content on our website, 4thand24.com. Thank you for listening.